Our next speaker is one of our leading journalists and writers. She's had the questionable privilege of sharing a desk with Boris Johnson in Brussels. And her first book was indeed just Boris, A Terrible Blonde Ambition. She then wrote a biography of Clementine Churchill, Winston Churchill's wife, First Lady. And her latest book is Kingmaker, Pamela Churchill Harriman's Astonishing Life of Seduction, Intrigue and Power. Ladies and gentlemen, Sonia Pennell.
Thank you all indeed for coming today. This is the first time I've spoken about Kingmaker in public, so I'm afraid this time I do have notes, forgive me. And also, I'm going to talk about a rather more earthy subject than we heard about just now. If you know anything about Pamela Harriman, you might know what I mean. In fact, her full names were Pamela Digby Churchill Hayward Harriman, and despite this marvellous name, she is barely known today. And if any of you do know her, as I say, it's probably because you think of her as an epic shagger, which she was. But there's more to it than that. Interestingly, photographs don't always do her justice. I did find a few for the book that give you some idea as to her powers, but it's much more complicated than that. She wasn't ever a classic beauty, and people, including Barbara Streisand, was obsessed. Well, how did she manage to be such a seductress? And she sidled up to her once at an event at the White House to ask her that very question. I'm afraid I don't know what Pamela said in response, but I do know that when Pamela was around in the 20th century, she was born in 1920, to have power in your life, you couldn't acquire it yourself. You had to acquire a powerful man, and that's what she was really, really good at. And how do you acquire a powerful man? You make the powerful man feel like a king, and she was even better at that. And how she did it, a few little tips. She flattered and fawned, and she practiced something called her mating dance, which was looking at someone intently with her sapphire eyes, smiling with her tongue pointed erotically just behind her teeth, and then doing a streaky, streaky thing on the forearm. Apparently it worked every time. She also learned, just to think, I know this is only lunchtime, but forgive me, I'm not going to tell you everything, but if you want to know anything by the book, believe me, it's in there, but I'll just tell you a little bit. She also learned exceptional sexual techniques from Ali Khan. Some of you may have heard of him. And why did Ali Khan know these sexual techniques? Because, amazingly, his father sent him as a teenager to a doctor in Cairo who gave him a six-week intensive course in what you do in bed. So she passed it on, he passed it on to her, and I managed to speak to a couple of the lucky men who were beneficiaries of this. As I say, there is quite a lot of detail in the book. But I'm not even going to tell you which page it's on. But the fact is that she wasn't just an epic shagger or a great seductress. She also educated herself in statecraft. And she became just as fluent in things like UN Security Council resolutions or the Panama Treaty or arms reduction treaties as she did in what to do in bed. And yet this was a woman who in her youth could neither spell nor add up, who never went to a school apart from a year at a sort of academy where she learned domestic science, which apparently is the posh name for cooking and sewing. Not that she ever did either, by the way, but you know, she did know how to do them. She was in fact a woman once described by Kit Kennedy to her brother Jack as a stupid, fat butterball. But the stupid fat butterball turned out to be so good at listening and absorbing things that she became an indispensable counsel to Winston Churchill, her father-in-law, briefly, in the 1940s, Gianni Agnelli of Fiat in the 1950s, JFK himself in the 1960s, and then out of the Democratic Party until she helped Bill Clinton, in his own words, reach the White House. He said, he told me he couldn't have done it without her. So we're talking about an immense life, not just in an erotic way, but in a political sense, over 50 years, imagine that. And three countries, there's also France comes into this, and two continents. In fact, President Biden stepping down at the end of this year marks the end of her political influence finally, because he too was one of her protégés. It's remarkable, really. So I've decided I'll come to view her in the terms of a Marks and Spencer's ad, which I know you'll think is a bit strange, but just bear with me and you'll see what I mean. So, she didn't just marry Churchill's son and live at Downing Street from the age of 19. She became, as I said, the great man's invaluable confidant as he waged the World War. She helped drag America into that conflict to save Britain and the world from tyranny. She cheered him up when he was down and acted as sounding board at all his most challenging moments, whether that was the invasion of Sicily or D-Day or plenty of others. Panda didn't just live through the Blitz. She was often at the centre of its fury and destruction, narrowly missed death several times, and even gave birth during an air raid at Chequers, with bombs crashing all around. Randolph, her husband and the father of the baby, was meanwhile elsewhere engaged, i.e. in the arms of another woman who couldn't be found. He was a bit of a bad man, as you'll also find out in the book. She didn't just know everything about the conduct of the war from her privileged position as Prime Ministerial Counsel and friend of the American military. She kept secrets and juggled information vital to victory, and crucially, she helped to smooth out spats between the Brits and the Americans, and there were plenty, not least on bombing campaigns. The Brits wanted to bomb at night, safer for air crews, this was Germany obviously. The Americans thought there were too many civilian casualties, wanted to bomb during the day. It was a major, major row, and she was dispatched by Churchill to try and find a compromise, and certainly one was found. So on Churchill's account, she didn't just seduce the most important Americans visiting London, Admiral Harriman, many generals and so on, woo them round to the British cause when they went back to Washington, they were all accused of having been bewitched, and extract vital intelligence from them during pillow talk. She helped to create, elevate and sustain the thing that we now call the special relationship. It didn't exist back then. And where did she do it? Well, she lived mostly between the sheets of the Dorchester Hotel. She didn't just know General Eisenhower, she didn't go to bed with him, by the way. She talked battle strategies with him, though, often invited him to intimate dinners in her apartment in Grosvenor Square, and in return, he did her washing up. She didn't just know Ed Murrow, the CBS correspondent. He fell for her as the great passion of his life, and she helped him sustain the British line with his famous forecast from London. You know, this is London. Very often, very, very pro-bit Brit. She was feeding lots of vital info. So virtually every general, every wartime leader was entranced by her, from FDR back in Washington, the notoriously prickly Charles de Gaulle, who was absolutely bewitched by her, and her fame even reached Stalin and the Kremlin, also equally obsessed with her. After the war, she didn't just know Gianni Agnelli, she was with him for 4 years and helped him rescue Fiat and thereby the Italian economy after the war, and rehabilitate himself from the shame of having fought for the fascists. I mean, Fiat was very, very nearly taken off the Agnellis by the Americans after the war, and she was very much instrumental in him being able to keep it. She transformed him into an industrial king, able to operate on an equal world leaders. In gratitude, he called her every day for the rest of her life at 7 a.m. every single day, bought her a very swanky apartment in Brussels, a custom-made Bentley, a butler, and cabs of all the couturiers. She did quite well, actually. She didn't just know Frank Sinatra, he proposed her and flew her around on his plane. She didn't just have an affair with the notorious cold fish Ellie de Rothschild. He fell for her and wanted to give it all up until she bailed on him. She didn't just marry a Broadway king. He was the one who brought us The Sound of Music, Leland Haywood. She didn't just fervently believe, on a more serious note, in finding a way to bring the Cold War to an end through opening new talks. She took part and was the lead speaker in a historic meeting with Andropov in the Kremlin in 1983 that planted the seeds of the great 1980s rapprochement between Washington and Moscow. Maybe we could do with someone like Pamela now. She started off disliking feminism, many people did, even women of her generation. She didn't just become a convert, but she became a champion of women in public life and the first female American ambassador to Paris. There have only been two even now, and I met the most recent one last week. Sorry, I'm on the third one now. But there were two after that. Incidentally, she was so unusual that no one quite knew whether to call her Madame l'Ambassadeur or Madame l'Ambassadrice. Only Madame l'Ambassadrice made her sound like the wife of the ambassador, so she was very, very strict. She would be Madame l'Ambassadeur. And finally, she didn't just get into American politics, she rescued the Democratic Party after its wipeout to Reagan in 1980, and by Sarah Clinton's own account, got him into the White House 12 years later, ending the party's long losing streak. She promoted him, she counseled him, she told him about international statecraft, after all she learnt it from Churchill. She really made a difference to his life. Oh, and by the way, she also helped young Senator Joe Biden weather his storms, telling him that the 1988 row over plagiarism when he went for the presidency at that point was just a wrinkle in his career, and in the long term, he would come back. Well, she was right about that. She even helped Nelson Mandela in his first multiracial elections in South Africa. No one knows about this stuff. This is all in her private papers. It was kind of completely hidden from public view. And she didn't just become an ambassador to France, as I said. She was a unique go-between between Clinton and Chirac during the Bosnia War. Both sides claimed that it would have been almost impossible to have the alliance that they had in order to bring that conflict to an end without the understanding that she had of both of them. She was a brilliant go-between that made, again, each man feel like a king, each man feel like they were getting their own way, but she somehow came out with an agreement that pleased them both. She believed, by the way, utterly in the global leadership of the United States and worked jolly hard to sustain it. Chirac compared her to Franklin and Jefferson in her diplomatic powers when she died. And one last thing, her life ran the gamut of the most intense emotions. Excitement, she had plenty of that. Anxiety, also plenty of that. Fear, ambition, love, jealousy, betrayal, some would say greed, certainly heartache, illness, but ultimately loneliness, a true killer. Sometimes when you have a life as exceptional as that, and you make a splash in the way that she did, you find yourself at the end on your own. You see, she didn't just have enemies, ambitious people often do. She had people, quite a few people, who loathed her and who wanted to destroy her and who actually trashed her reputation, something that I've been trying to sort of, you know, overturn just a little, because it turns out she wasn't at all the woman that people used to think she was. And on that point, actually, those who worked closely with her, her admirers often, she had people, they didn't just admire her, they thought she was a one-off in history. They were right. And whether you were a world leader, a general, a diplomat, a lover, or even an enemy, she was unforgettable. And yet, as I said, like so many astonishing women, history has buried her or misunderstood her worth. I think Kamala Harris, in the position that she is now, has a lot to, you know, to thank Kamala Harriman for. I know that Hillary Clinton did, they were quite close. And I'm just hoping that I can change her reputation for a wider audience. Thanks very much for listening.